Welcome back, everybody. This is Lisa, otherwise known as Call That Girl, and you're listening to Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. This is show number two. And last week, if you missed it, I have to apologize because I was doing my first show and I just kind of realized that if I'm going to be doing a lot of these shows, which I should be doing, there has to be some rhyme and reason to them. So maybe we'll consider this show my first one because it's kind of a kickoff to remote support and what you really need to do to get started and effectively and efficiently run your remote support bench desk, I call it. But anyway, last week's show was a pretty decent one, I think, for my first one. We talked about protecting your money. And those are very important things to learn when you do remote support. So if you haven't had a chance, go back and check out my first show on how to protect your money. And hopefully you'll learn a few things. So let's catch up now. It's been a couple weeks. And last week, boy, unfortunately, it was one of those slow weeks with remote support. And I tell you that it comes in sets of threes, I've learned. 1 week it'll be slow. You're like, you know what? The calls are less. The money's less. When I'm not hopping and hipping and being fast, I get really bored and irritated. So I made it through the week, and I had a little mini vacation and enjoyed a few days away from the house and from work. And I had an assistant help me do my emails and some calling backs, just so I had some appointments set for on Monday. And then this week came, and it was another slow week. And I tell you that, you know, you wonder, what am I doing wrong? Why is it slow? Like, the universe isn't telling me something, or it's maybe telling me I need a break, because I work fast and furious, you know? And, so another slow week, but I got good stories either way, and I'll be telling a few here in a minute or two. But anyway, I did enjoy my time off, and we're back on with shows and hopefully be keeping up some consistency here. This week's topic is general operations, which is kind of where you need to start if you're going to have a successful remote support business, or if you're just going to add it on as a new service for your on-site work and your stores. The operations side of remote support is a little different, so a little bit here, we'll talk about that. That's our week topic here. And now I'd like to talk about some of the jobs I had last week. And some of them are doozies. And there's a lot of learning lessons here because there's some good ones. And I try to take notes during the week so I can have things for the show. And it's kind of funny when I think of the learning lessons I had for each one and what happened. And by the way, I got feedback from two listeners already who said they love the show and they love the stories. So I'm a storyteller and there's going to be tons of stories. So don't worry. Okay. So last week, I want to start with telling a story about the one client that is probably the most difficult client I've ever had. I mean, she's not mean or anything, but the poor woman always has a technical snag going on, and she only has two employees in a home office, so it's not like she's got this huge setup or anything. But last year, when my store started to close, she got kind of nervous that she wasn't going to have on-site support, so she kind of fired me. And, you know, it hurts when a client calls and says that they're going to be moving on and having someone else help them, and you know, I mean, it really wasn't a personal thing. She was just fearing I wouldn't be able to help her. And so I took the hit and said, okay, you know, that's fine. And lo and behold, a couple weeks ago, I sent out a newsletter. And a few hours later, I got a call from her. And she said, can you help me with some issues? And I was just like, sure. You know, what's going on? And she said, well, my network is really slow. My Outlook won't ever update. Files don't save. And I said, all right, let me remote in. Now, this is a perfect remote support job. You don't need to be on site unless you have to replace a modem or router for the client. I mean, everything else should be done by the computer. So I remote in and I did like a mini tune up and I did some poking around and checked her internet speed and I just couldn't figure out anything wrong. I mean, just everything seemed to be fine. And I don't remember what I did actually, but she said for some reason, just me remoting in just saved it and it started working, which, you know, doesn't happen. And then A few days later, she said, I have the same problem. So then I think I turned off a setting in Outlook and something worked quicker. Anyway, the point of the story is I end up going to her house to find a huge mess that this technician she hired kind of messed up a bunch of things. And normally I don't do on-site jobs, but for this return client, you know, I mean, she's kind of a whale for me. So you kind of have to throw down and go to their home sometimes. And I, you know, I do have contracted technicians, which she would have accepted just fine. But, you know, when you're bringing back a client that's a big money ticket, you kind of want to give that extra level. And I ended up selling her a 15-hour package, which she'll go through this year. You know, so I got it all up front, and now she's covered. And that's in one of my shows coming up. We're going to talk about the prepay ticket, which is the absolute winner in remote support. But again, I got a client back. And the reason why I got her back is, and here's a tip. When you offer remote support, you have to be fast and you have to be responsive. I mean, someone emails you a request and you don't get back to them same day or the next day, you're not going to have a good business. I'm just giving you that forewarning right now, because people like being responded to even if you can't help them. And that's all they want. They just want to know that you are paying attention to them and when can we get this on the books. So anyway, I earned her respect back. I got her back. I did the support myself because I don't have any, you know, employees right now. And then we move on to kind of the opposite kind of client that I supported this last week. And I'm going to be very honest about this. I'm not a fan of Angie's List at all. And I might start talking about products and stuff like that and name names, because honestly, I think we're all in the same field and we all want to learn the same stuff. And I, you know, I put out a coupon on Angie's List about a year and a half ago when I was an advertiser with them, which is pretty much a ripoff. But I put out this coupon and I haven't advertised with them in like 10 months or so, since January at least. So I was like, all right, I'll do the job. It's just a tune-up. It was for $59. And, you know, I think my problems I've had with Angie's List, for the most part, is that, you know, you're kind of like, if you don't go above and beyond for these people and totally kiss their ass, you're going to get a bad review. And that's the fear that Angie's List people put in you. And it just seems like they're always very adamant, too. Now, I'm not saying every client is, but many of them are. And trust me, I've had some really sweet people too. But I mean, I've got 15 reviews on Angie's List, and all of them have been through remote support jobs. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but the picky people are the ones that normally cause you more issues and things like that. And, you know, I just wasn't sure I wanted to do that job. And it turns out that she had to get rescheduled twice because I had scheduled it with my technician first. And then he couldn't do the job, so then I had to take it. And trust me, at this point, I'm not sure I like doing tune-ups and virus removal so much anymore. I'm trying to just give them to him so I can focus in on better sales and marketing. But I ended up doing it, and it turned out to be a virus removal. And the lady had Windows XP with 512 memory and AVG 2014, I mean, the thing was just like a huge whale, the computer. It was so weighed down, and I was really being nice to her. And I said, okay, ma'am, so here's the situation. You know, next April, you're going to have to get a new computer. And she was like, no, I don't have to get a new computer. And I said, well, I think you're going to want to, because Microsoft is going to have an end-of-life series on this computer. And even though it probably runs great, it's just not going to be safe to have on the internet anymore. She goes, that is not going to happen, Lisa. I am not going to get a new computer. She goes, I have a daughter in college, and I got all these bills to pay. And I said, well, you know what? That's okay. I'm just letting you know. Like, I think she was thinking I was trying to upsell her, which is totally not what my intentions were. Because trust me, someone's paying $59 for a tune-up, there's probably no upselling going on. But anyway, and then I told her, you know, I did the best job on the tune-up I could, considering she's got such low memory and AVG on there. And I said, pretty much, you know, just give me a call back if you have any problems. And I was kind of just like thinking, please don't have any problems. You know, it's like you just don't want that call back. Safely, it's been a week and there's been no call. So I'm thrilled about that. And another big job I had last week, which is a huge learning opportunity. If anybody out there is just kind of like giddy excited about all the end of life things going on, you have to pay attention to Outlook Express. That is going to be a winner for some of us, because all these people on XP, a lot of them are doing Outlook Express. And if you're doing Outlook Express, you just can't upgrade it quickly. You know, there is one thing I have to research still about Outlook Express and upgrading to Outlook 2013 and I'll be honest, I'm not sure if you can even go right from Outlook Express to 2013 yet. So that's one of those things I got to look into. Excuse me. But anyway, this company hired me to do an Outlook Express transition. And I quoted them 4 hours of time because I was like, you know, I don't even know. I know I can do it. But their end goal was to get all of their mail, 11 gigs, up to Outlook.com. So they didn't even want it to be on 2013. They just wanted to be able to access all their email from many different computers. So I took on the challenge, you know. I took it on. I had one technical snag after another. Let's just start with that. Because I didn't want to affect their main workstation where they have 2,200 folders. And I'm not kidding. And I didn't want it to affect their day-to-day work that they already had going on. So I took a copy of the database, put it on a Windows 7 computer that had Outlook 2007 on it. I couldn't import it. It just didn't work. So I had to go and import it through Windows Live Mail, which that did work. Then I had to export Windows Live Mail to a PST file to get it into Outlook. I got that to work. Then the problem is, I couldn't get, I spend a lot of time on this. I couldn't get the folders, I got the folders to import to Outlook.com, but they all were empty because of some restriction. So I was having also an issue because it was so slow. And I was like, what's going on with this computer? It's like just super slow with the internet. Well, turns out they had a download of 0.5. I'm like, what? Where? 0.5? I'm never going to get this up to the cloud. So I ended up transferring the whole PST file from that computer to my own. And it took overnight, but I got it. And then I did all the handiwork on my side. And I got it all into Outlook. And I got into Outlook 2013. And then I had issues with importing it into Outlook.com. Because it doesn't allow Exchange Active Sync. Another technical snag. And I'm not even kidding. It's just like, it's the job that just wouldn't end. And the clients, you know, right in the beginning, I quoted them 4 hours. They were like, is this going to cost us a lot of money? And I said, you know, no, I'm just going to leave it at the project rate because I'm learning a ton. And it's not their fault. It's just like, just kept running into snags. And, you know, finally, I figured out that I had to set up IMAP for their Outlook.com account on my Outlook 2013, and then I could start moving mail. So if anybody, you know, wants to skip some steps, is if you're going to do this, you just can't import it in without doing IMAP, and IMAP seemed to be the winner. So that was a huge lesson learned, but it's also a marketing opportunity because there's so many people with Outlook Express that we're going to have to support. And like I said, I don't know if you can just jump in and install 2013 on it. I'm going to be practicing on one of my XP boxes I have over the weekend, and I'll report back in my next show. Okay, moving ahead. And we're going to talk about that XP computer I just got, by the way. So I had this other client that said, Lisa, I need a home visit. And I was like, I don't do them really, but I'm going to for now. And I was going to try to remote into her Windows 8 computer. And she's a retired elderly woman. I couldn't remote in. So I said, yes, I'll come over. And I get to her house. and she had no start menu button. I mean, I don't even know how her and her husband even managed to manipulate the computer at this point. I don't think they did, to be honest with you. So I gave them the shortcut button. I helped them tweak out a few things. I was there about an hour and a half. And, you know, they said they're missing their address books from their computer. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll just take it with me and get those for you. And I said, well, the first, you know, let me see if I can just take the hard drive out. And I opened up their computer, and I'm not even kidding you, their computer looked like it just came out of the box brand new. It was mint condition. Like, I said, wow, what are you going to do with this computer? And they're like, oh, we're going to take it over to Best Buy and recycle it. And I said, can I have it? And they're like, sure. So I need a test bed, you know, XP computer. I didn't have one. And plus, you know, everything was all set up, all the software. So that's going to be my new Outlook Express if I need to have it. And so that was kind of a winner for me. But now, of course, the computer's blue screening. So, yay. I get to take out the data anyway. But anyway, that's just one of the other pitfalls I had to deal with. And I'm lucky that I really enjoy this email stuff, because to me, I don't know if a lot of other people would know how to go in and get that or whatever. Also, last week, I had plenty of toolbar removal calls, which are very common. And if you're listening to the show and you have a shop and you aren't doing remote support, but you're thinking about it, let me just tell you that, you know, it's super easy to have some bench work going on and remote at the same time. I did it for years with my shops. And the nice thing is, when people call to say, hey, you know, a bunch of toolbars and blah, blah, blah problems, you know, can I bring it in? Well, do the math in your head first and go, let's see, I can remote in and get this done in like 45 minutes and don't need anything on the bench. And it's pretty much the fast money. Or you can have it and bring it on the bench and leave it and put it in your rotation. So this is where remote support can rock for you, because you can have a few sessions going and tell the clients, this is going to take me some time. Well, they'd rather have it take their time than, you know, lose it for a few days on the bench. So, tip for you folks not doing remote yet. Okay, and I got two more, and then we'll move into some news and updates. Okay, so last week I did a tune-up on this lady's computer. And it was pretty standard, you know, nothing was really wrong, just needed some cleaning up. And a few days later, she calls me, and I just, you know, I hate the after call when there's a snag. And you always want to be nice, you know, like, oh no, what doesn't work? Because remember, in last week's show, we talked about what's covered and what's not in a tune-up. Like, if things break, or especially with virus removals, you know, viruses break things. And, it, you know, we should be charging for those, even though most of us don't charge. And she goes, well, my sound doesn't work anymore. I'm like, no. Oh, it just pained me to even think about having to fix this. I was like, oh God, who knows what happened? Okay, so I cheerfully said, well, let me remote back in and I'll go see what, you know, what happened, and tried the standard stuff, you know, installed new drivers and tried a few tweaks and didn't work. And finally, at about the 15 minute mark, I said, you know what? I'm at my threshold here. Let's just do a system restore, and I'd rather redo the tune-up. Doesn't that make more sense? I mean, I'm not going to try to spend hours fixing this. And it was just one of those days I was just super busy. So, I mean, you know, the tune-ups don't take us long. It's just I'm redoing the job. And she did the system restore, worked like a charm. This time I did not run a, you know, cleaning tool, so it didn't ruin anything. I cleaned up her system and she's good to go. System restore is your friend in remote support. Don't forget that. Many times people will call me with a virus. I'm sorry, but it's just easier to have them do a system restore. Then you remote in and then you clean up whatever crap they had from before the virus removal. Give them some good protection, back up their work for them, back up their stuff. And instead of spending all the time fighting the virus, you're actually just putting in some more prevention for them and helping them. System Restore has helped me in so many pinches remotely. And it works a lot of times when people call and say, you know, I have a blue screen on death. And I called some other shops and they said I need a new hard drive. I said, how do you know if you need a new hard drive? You have a blue screen on death. You know, it could be anything. And they said they've been calling. And I said, well, let me walk you through this for free. System Restore, it works like a charm. So just consider that one of your tools in your toolkit with remote support, because if you can get in with safe mode with networking, you're pretty much in the good at that point. Okay, finally, last week and the week before, even though it was slow, man, I still just sold and sold and sold. And, you know, it was slow last week, but the first 3 weeks of the month, it was nice. And I think we're in the buying season, people. So I think the next show I'll do is I'll talk about prepay tickets, because I really want to make sure that everybody that's doing these understands the value of when you have current clients and you're building the rapport with them, that they will pay you more money for services for a year from now. You just have to have the right pitch, and you have to have the right just kind of suave feel about yourself, that you're confident, you're going to be there for them, you're going to continue to support them. And I think I'll talk about that next week, because it's holiday season and now is the time. My clients buy the most before Christmas, believe it or not. And I have excellent sales during those months. Okay, moving ahead, we're going to talk about the big news. I mean, everybody is talking about CryptoLocker. And guess what? I don't think this thing is fixable via remote. Okay, I've done some research. I've read all the blogs. I've read the forums. I just kind of took myself out of this one, folks. I just can't even. You know what I did is I took the approach of helping my clients with prevention. And this is what you can do in the next week or so after you listen to the show is, if you're interested, I can send you a copy of my email. It's just easy to read. I sent it out this morning to like 1,200 people. I got good response. I prepared. I told them what they should not do, what they should do. And I also said, I can't support this virus if you get it. And it gets through any antivirus pretty much. So I gave them a heads up. I told them and warned them and said, you know, don't open email attachments and take your external hard drive off your computer when you're done backing up. And it affects mapped computers and networks and whatnot. So I did the best thing I could. But after reading all the technical work, I mean, I'm a technician. I just was like, I'm not going to go drive to someone's house to go get a CryptoLocker virus just so I can learn how to remove it, because that I just can't do. And I just do remote support now. So honestly, at some point, you just have to say, I can't do that. I can't fix it. And if you're one of those techs that's doing remote only, learn and pick your battles. You know, be always clear with your clients on what you can help them with and what you can't. And you shouldn't go wrong with that, because now my clients know. And if they chose not to read my email, that's their choice. That's kind of how I felt about this. But on the other hand, this brings up a new opportunity for us in remote support to sell some new products. And I've always kind of played with the idea of supporting a Cronus backup. You know, I haven't got into it heavily. I always admit when I don't know things, but I do know how the program works. I've seen the software. It's not rocket science. So this week, I signed up as an affiliate partner and I think it's called just partner plan. I'm not exactly sure. So I can buy in bulk and get the product at a lower rate, which is how I usually do on my product sales. Or I can have the clients click on a link and then Cleverbridge pays me an affiliate fee, which is how I used to sell Malwarebytes, by the way. But then I realized I make more money by buying it in bulk. And so Cronus will probably end up being in that same boat. But, you know, the thing that I'm not sure is, I haven't gotten into it yet, is how to start pitching it to people. Most clients have an external hard drive. It's just that I think they need one that's been reformatted and it can't have other data on it. But I'm just trying to figure out a new marketing way to sell that product, because, you know, I already sell Mosey online, so I might as well sell that. And I don't think I need to sell both, because the Cronus should be doing it. They also have a cloud solution attached with that for 5 gigs for free right now as well. And I think they have a premium package where you can get 250 gigs in the cloud, but I couldn't imagine how long that would even take to upload. Good Lord. Anyway, so that is one thing I did find in the past few weeks, is I also started to tighten up my interview process with these clients for CyberLocker, and I also tell them, and honestly, sales aren't increasing because of that, but I'm just giving them some updates, and I've been blogging and sending out newsletters, and that's, you know, it's a good time when there's problems like this out there to talk to your clients a little bit different if you're not sending out newsletters, because they do pay attention, and they do email and thank you, and some people actually booked appointments with me today, just for tune-ups, and of course, to have their data backup checked. Okay, we're going to take a break right now. Remember to send in some questions to me if you have any. You can email me at lisa@podnuts.com. I have a Podnuts email now. Thank you, Dor. And if you want to hear about any topics for upcoming shows, I'm hoping to get the shows into a weekly rotation. I have to admit, I'm not used to this yet, and it's starting to, you know, I got to get used to it and figure out my formats every week, and I kind of want to have a consistency thing, so bear with me, we'll get there. Anyway, I'm up for anything. Send me topic things you want to hear about, ask me questions, tell me, oh, fooey, you did that wrong, or here's what you should have done, Lisa, because I just wing it. I work by myself, I don't have any coworkers, and I sometimes, you know, need help myself. Anyway, on with the show, and this week's topic is general operations. And this topic came because I had a listener, well, it's actually not a listener. He just bought my remote book some time ago, and he just emailed me some questions. So when we're done talking about the operations, I'll answer the questions from the listener. But anyway, I want to start with general operations and what you need to have to run a remote support show of your own. And this is stolen from my new ebook coming out. So if you're interested, you can buy my book at the bottom of the Podnuts page. And the third edition should be out here in about a month or so. But this is the new operations list I put out there, and I'm going to tell it to you right now too. So, you have to have a to-do list. Now, trust me, you're like, what are you talking about, Lisa? I have a to-do list every day running in a notepad on my computer, and you have to have it, because when you start doing remote support, you're going to have to do research for clients, you have to do callbacks, you have to do scheduling, you have research to do. There's lots of little things that you have to do that don't happen on a bench, and I honestly could not run my remote support show without a to-do list. So that's the top thing I want you to do, is create a to-do list. And I actually start with Monday, space, Tuesday, space. Because I'm like, you know, sometimes I need time in between to do other things. So I kind of just keep a running list, like, okay, go research this Windows 8 issue why Internet Explorer won't open. And I'm going to Maryland's next week, so I have to have it done by then. Those are reminders for myself. But anyway, with remote support, it can get kind of crazy, because your bench is in one monitor and, you know, you have to keep everything there. Next thing is you need to prepare your website. Now, at the bottom of the show here, I'm going to have some links so you can use as reference, and feel free to take any information if you need to. But to be most efficient, you do need to have a schedule an appointment page. And at the bottom of the show right now, that's the one that's marked callthatgirl.biz/schedule-an-appointment. And the schedule appointment page is where I send people when they want to schedule an appointment online, and that's on the top navigation bar of my website as well. So if people are like, oh, can I schedule an appointment, I send them to that link, because it gathers all the information I need to kind of get an idea of what they need. You will also need a payment link. And a good one is the callthatgirl.biz/pay button. And that there takes you to my PayPal, which is my credit card processor. I don't know. A lot of people use other credit card processing companies, and I get it. I just really love PayPal. It's easy. I can do it off my phone. I can take money from the credit card. I can, you know, transfer it to my bank. I can sit on it, whatever. And they're great to work with, so I'm going to promote them with for no reason at all. But anyway, they're easy, and a lot of people have PayPal accounts as well. Excuse me. Another thing you might need is an FAQ page to explain or outline some of your services and products. I have a ton of them all over my website, and I actually use my website for just about everything, but so it can get to be a mess. But if you keep an FAQ page, which could contain, like, here's instructions on how to set up your antivirus, here's instructions on how to do online backup, you're going to get requests that are kind of what I would say redundant. They're constant, and why write it up every time for a person? I'd rather email them the link and have them go read it on my blog, you know, just whenever. Then they can save it and favorite it. And I used to do this a lot, which was write up my own documentation every time. And I was like, what am I doing? That's so stupid. So now, even simple instructions, I go post on my blog, and it also helps with SEO. So you're putting it out there and people search it. If you do your SEO right, it helps you two ways. So you do need an FAQ page and also just other documentation for products you sell. I also have a few pages for my antivirus protection that I sell, and which is Malwarebytes and Microsoft Security Essentials. And I also have, back when I used to have employees, I had a protection plan. So that was outlined on there, and we sent people that link so they knew what they were buying. Also, on your website, you're going to need a remote support page, so you can talk people through that when they want to connect to you remotely. Mine is callthatgirl.biz/remote-support. It's also on my navigation bar on my website. So when I talk people through it, I say, oh, go to remote support on my website, and then in there, you're going to fill out the client agreement form, which is the next thing on the list. You have to have a client agreement form in place, period. Even if you don't use it every day because you're trying to get a job done or whatever the case is, or you forget, you should really try to use the client agreement form. It kind of gives you some security in the work that you're doing, that your clients are reading it, and you also collect all their information. Not everybody fills out the schedule and appointment page because you took the phone call or something. So if you have them do the client agreement form, you can read through mine. The link is at the bottom of the show notes. And it kind of just outlines the basics. I'm not going to steal your stuff. I'm not responsible if your computer dies after I help you. I'm not responsible if your data gets corrupted, whatever. You know, we're there to do a job, service your computer. And I mean, I'm a professional. I'm not going to steal your stuff. That's the big thing people want to see, is that it's in that agreement. So make sure you have a clause in your agreement that says, you know, no, I'm not going to steal your stuff, and make them check the box. It says that they read that. The nice thing about WordPress forms is that you can have a form for anything, and that's why I love WordPress. But anyway, the remote support link takes them to fill out the client agreement form, and then because I kind of do the sneaky thing, is after they fill out the client agreement form, it takes them to the payment page. And there's two reasons why I do that, is because sometimes I just send people to the client agreement form and I have them pay me before the job, which is almost everything, or excuse me, every time I have them do that. And then I refund them afterwards if the job is less, or I collect more if the job happens to be more money. But for the most part, I have nobody complaining. They do the client agreement form, they pay me, and then after the payment link, it should kick them back to the remote support button where I can get connected. Just to let you know, if they did that on their own prior to the appointment, the big pink remote support button I have takes them right to my Log Me and Rescue 6-digit code area. That's where you could put in your TeamViewer, your Screen Connect, or whatever you have, and get them connected in that way. It's sometimes easier. It's also, from what I hear, because people know callthatgirl.biz is pretty easy, but there's still people that call it Call Back Girl and Call the Bat Girl and all these funky things. So if you think it's to your advantage to have a domain that's easier, like connectmetolisa.com, then that could go right to your, you know, your page or your remote support as well. Another thing that you might want to do is create some email templates. So when you're on the phone booking an appointment, you can tell the client, let me get your email, and I'm going to send you the information for the remote support job. And once we secure your payment, we'll consider the appointment on the books with a 24-hour cancellation fee. Don't forget to add that in there. Even though if you don't charge it or not, make sure you're just clear about it. But the email templates are nice because what I love is that I'll call a 2 o'clock appointment. They already have the client agreement form done. They already have their payment in. I can get in and just start to work. And, you know, you do your, you know, pre-questions like, okay, what else is going on? Did you tell me everything? Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, within 5 minutes, you should be on your own to get going. So the email templates, I'll try to get some in the show notes to anybody that wants them. I'll put them up on a website probably for that. Another thing I want to talk about, is a ticket system. You definitely should have a ticket system because what's also nice about that is you put in the client information and then you do the documentation of the job and you can invoice right away. And a lot of clients really like getting an invoice and a receipt as soon as the job's over. So what I do is while I'm in their computer, I already know they paid or sometimes I have to collect more. I just send out the receipt right there on the spot and it's over and done. And I just love that, you know, in the past, I used to be kind of lazy and go, oh, I got to send out all these invoices. I got to send all these receipts. And that's no longer the case now. I keep everything open at once. All my main tools, I keep my ticket system. I keep my PayPal open, my Outlook, all my main tools right there. And let's see, the ticket system, I do use mHelpDesk at the time. A lot of people have always asked me what I use. I do find it to be fairly simple. I like a lot of the, you know, options it has. I know there's tons of other products out there. You need to pick what works for you and how you also do your books. So if you already have QuickBooks Online and that works for you, if you need to be on the field and you need a mobile app, you might have to find one that works for you. Doing some test and trialing, you know, basically before I used mHelpDesk, I was using a Excel spreadsheet for years. And to be honest with you, I still keep track of stuff with that same Excel spreadsheet because I like seeing my weekly stuff really handy and I'm kind of addicted and I can't get off it. So ticket system or not, I still got the old school stuff going on. Anyway, there's also a really cool thread over at Technible. What's his name? Xander. It's actually with an X. So I hope I'm saying his name right. Xander or Xander. But he started a really cool thread over at Technible. And it actually has a nice review of all the software available for remote. I use LogMeIn Rescue. I've been dedicated to it for many years. I am playing with new software currently. And as I start to play with it, I will have feedback. But I do know that there's just tons of software out there, you know. You can seriously test whatever works best for you because I think, well, actually, I like what works best for the client. And the one thing I found is the easier it is to connect to a client, the better experience they have. There's another software I'm playing with right now. And once I, you know, have some time under the belt with it, I will announce it and let people know how I feel about it. But I need to just not do my other software. Like, I got to just shut off my brain and be like, I'm not going to use that anymore. I just want to try something new. I've been using this for a long time, and it's just me now. I don't have a big team of people. And anyway, so to finish up this part of the general operations, that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I need to run my remote support show. I'll recap real quick. You need to schedule an appointment page. You need a payment link for your website. You need an FAQ page and a documentation page. You need to have a remote support link on your website to connect people in. You should have a client agreement form online that collects the information and shows them some level of liability. You should have an email template ready to go so you can email folks with the appointment information. You should have a ticket system in place and some good remote software. Outside of that, I've got just tons more information of things. You could have products, services, it doesn't end. We'll catch up with that in other shows. But that is the end of our general operations segment for the show. And next we're going to move on to remote support tips. Oh, the biggest tip I have for everybody is if you're going to do remote support, you have to have a lot of patience. And you have to have a lot of nail biting and chomping at the bit and a lot of under your breath, hurry, 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 find that button. No, don't say that. It's just, you have to have a lot of patience. I had two clients this week, both of them. I can't even believe I haven't tackled one on. Is one guy had a virus down in Texas. His daughter asked me to help him. I sent it over to my tech to help first, and he called me in tears almost and said, you know, I tried TeamViewer, I tried LogMeIn, I cannot get remoted into this guy's computer. And how much time do you give before you have to just give up? That's the question. So, of course, I hadn't emailed the daughter yet to say that my tech couldn't get in. And lo and behold, she emails me the next day and says, my dad is really sad with a frowny smile. And I just went, oh, no. You don't want dad down in Texas mad or upset. He wasn't mad, but just disappointed, I think, that he couldn't get it fixed. So I told the daughter, I said, well, let me try a couple tricks. Now, one trick I like is if you can email somebody a connection link, because many times these viruses let you do that. So it's a little sneaky trick. You know, you email the link to the person. He's on AOL. It works. In theory, it should bypass everything because AOL is its own nightmare. No. Nope. He didn't get the emails from the server. I was like, come on. Never came. Finally, in some browser, I don't know how, he got the LogMeIn 123 to work. So I saw a connection start. I was kind of excited because eventually, we're at the probably 45-minute mark with me, which is really too far long for me to even keep trying. I don't spend an hour trying to get connected with somebody ever anymore. 5 years ago I did. Not anymore. We just couldn't get a solid connection, so I had to tell the guy, you have to take your computer to a shop at this point. I can't remote in, and I'm very sorry. And I emailed the daughter, and she never emailed me back. I felt so bad. I was like, I know, I'm sorry, but can't do it. It's just, I think, honestly, it was end user error, too. You know, I think that he just wasn't catching the connect button and things like that. And so, anyway, you have to have patience. And actually, you should know how to troubleshoot without seeing it, too. It's like a brain map of what the client is seeing. That's really helpful. All right, folks, we are about the end of this show. We're at the 44-minute mark. And I'd like to remind everybody, if you're interested in learning more about remote support, there's a link at the bottom of the page. Help support Podnuts. Help support me. You can buy the ebook. Right now, you're going to get the second edition. And soon here, the third edition will be out. It's almost done. It's in the editor's hands. But the third edition is the awesome book. And I'm really happy and proud. And after this edition, there is going to be no more new ebooks. We are going to be, well, not we, me. I'm going to be running a website. And the website is going to have all the updates for the books in it. And it's going to have some forum options for chatting only about remote support. Only people that have bought the book will have access. So it's a very elite club of ours. We're going to keep all the non-remote support people out. And I'm really excited about this because I've been told by the people who bought this last book 2 years ago that 2 years is too long to go. And I have to agree. But, you know, it's actually a lot of work writing a book. And it's I just, you know what? I just felt like I think we're in a faster society and technology changes so fast that I just want to do it on a website now and then, you know, we can all participate together and help each other. So if you are interested, you can buy the book at the bottom and click on the link. And you can also follow me on Facebook if you're interested. It's facebook.com/callthatgirlhelpdesk. You can follow me on Twitter @callthatgirl. And you can invite me on LinkedIn, which is my bread and butter. And that's linkedin.com/in/callthatgirl. Don't forget to please buy all your purchases that you buy on Amazon through the Podnuts link, Podnuts/Amazon. And remember to check the show notes down below. We'll have a couple blogs out there, all the links that we talked about earlier. And you can sign up for my feeds on my website to catch my blog updates. Feel free to take what you need to send out to your network and to send out through to your clients. Next week, we have a show called Fraud and You. And I'll probably have another topic, too, because I don't think I could talk about fraud for half hour. But it was requested by a reader. And before I forget, I want to answer this guy's questions he sent in. Because he's already emailed me once saying, are you going to do my questions, Lisa? So, anyway, here's his email, and then I'll close the show. Questions from a listener. I see that you have gone through some changes in your business and you no longer have stores. I took some time off myself and I'm trying to get back in the groove of things and in the process of redoing my website and changing my business model from break fix to a more maintenance service managed type service model. So his questions are this. Are you actually doing all of the support work yourself or do you still have a tech or two helping out? Because he's looking to get a part-time tech helper and he has a few questions. The answer is this, is that it is mostly me doing all the work. I do have a couple contractors that I help, that help me when I have overflow. And one guy, I'm actually just trying to get him to do all of the virus removals and tune-ups and whatnot and the little more, you know, intricate networking things. But so far, this, like I said, it's been slow the last couple weeks, so I don't have to hire him. I just do all the work myself. But I would love to get out of all that. So I do not have any employees anymore. And I guess to maybe help guide this question is if you, you know, are into remote support, make sure that you have the, this guy bought my book, have your employee read the book and get to know a little bit more about it because a junior tech should be able to pick up on this stuff really quick. How much did I pay my techs and when did you hire them? I think I was in my third year when I hired my first full-time guy. It was just me for first 3 years. Then I hired a full-timer because I was really trying to open a store and had a lot of problems. I started paying him $12 an hour, and he ended up leaving me 2.5 years after that, making a really nice dollar. I won't say what, but I think $12 is kind of a common, you know, junior tech, you know, rate. To pay, I guess, 10 maybe, and I think in some areas I've even heard 9 and 8, you know, which depends on where you live, you know, depends on what people get paid. And how do I handle scheduling my techs if they were contractors? Well, the current contractor I have, since it's all based on him as a contractor, he tells me when he's available, and then I schedule him the work. And since he's a contractor, I cannot delegate him labor, so he literally just does the jobs for me. And he does a good job. And, you know, I think what I used to love about employees was I could, you know, say, hey, when it's slow, you should do projects and do other things, right? Look up tech stuff. Well, that's easier said than done. And so I really, really like contractors because they just follow my processes and they just do the work. And they set their own hours, which is kind of nice. And let me see another part of this one. Do you have set hours or just call and say, hey, I do most of the time. If I have an empty calendar, I also take calls on the fly, which is awesome if you have the time, but scheduled appointments are also really nice. The contractor prefers scheduled appointments because he's got his own work to do too. And then he asked me if I have a template ad when you're hiring a tech. Honestly, I think every tech I had to create a new job description so that it didn't work for me. because I had a really big contract to hire techs for, and it kind of changed a little bit. And I do still use mHelpDesk. So that was his questions, and I'm going to close the show, folks. Like I said, follow me on the social media circuit. Email me, lisa@podnuts.com, and give me some feedback. I'd love to know more what everybody's thinking about the show and if you have any questions. That's it, and take care.